welcome to another episode of Beer Opinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger from Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's, and with me again is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you. I come back, and all of a sudden the setup is just a lot more intense and better. So hopefully
it's like a real podcast.
It's like a real podcast. I've even got these huge headphones on. It's kind of freaking me out, but I love it. So thank you guys.
People listening are probably like, I can't believe you guys didn't have headphones before. Yeah. And, you know, since they all sounded like we were in two separate rooms and someone was down a hall, hopefully this all makes it better. I think the last podcast did sound much, much better.
Yeah.
And your fill-in, Gary Valentine, filled your shoes nicely. I just want you to know that. I'm sure you're feeling
I'm feeling the heat, and I think that's probably why it sounded better. It wasn't just the equipment.
You know, I mean, I didn't say that. I inferred it.
Yeah, right.
No, we had a very nice podcast, last one with Gary Valentine, but Bruce is back. No one can fill your shoes, Bruce.
Thanks, man.
Because they're
Thanks.
Gigantic, yeah. Like clown feet.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
All right. Well, a new episode of Beer Opinions. This is episode 21, maybe. Who knows? No one really
knows. It's 21 or 22.
21 or 22.
I think.
It feels like, 122.
We've been doing this for like 20
years. I'm sure it feels that way for the listener.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But thanks, everyone, for tuning in again. This is where we talk about stories in beer that are going around. We don't have a guest this week, so we're going to prattle on about the latest gossip and controversies, of which craft beer has no lack of.
Yeah, every now and then I'm kind of worried because I'm like, are we going to run out of stuff to say? And then I'm quickly not worried about it again.
Yeah, and then, you know, 10 things happen. And
people just, beer Twitter.
Yes.
Just goes like crazy, and I'm like, we're back. You know?
Twitter, the source of all controversies.
Yeah.
We're not getting into politics. So.
Yeah, no, no.
I just got back from New Orleans late last night. I'm not feeling, up to snuff. This could be, bad or very good for the podcast. We'll see how it goes. But, you're really going to have to pump up the energy today, Bruce. Okay. This is all on you.
This is going to be your Michael Jordan flu game podcast.
That's right. I mean? Yeah. Just, yeah.
You're going to break through on this.
I'm going to score 60. So we do have a few topics, some things that have been going on. I think, the first one is, this whole business with the BA, and they have put out a joke video, which was kind of funny, about wanting to crowdfund to buy Anheuser-Busch InBev. I think they just need, how much?
It was $213 billion.
Is that all?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, I think if we get one more person, we probably can do it.
Yeah. It wasn't a real crowdfunding, just to make that clear. It was kind of a jokey video and kind of to poke the bear on the acquisitions that have been going on with the big boys. Although, I get it. I also don't, none of these were hostile takeovers of these craft breweries, you can poke AB all you want about it, but in the end, it's the guy that sold it to him that signed the papers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's genius marketing from the Brewers Association. It's hilarious. When it came through the pike, I thought it was serious, and I was like, this is insane. And then I was like, joke's on me. And I actually went on today to just kind of poke around a little bit, and I pledged. So if you pledge when you go on there, they don't take any money. So, it's just kind of like whatever you want to give. And then they have like a disclaimer: in the most unlikely event that this happens, we might come to you. But, it's never going to happen. So you can kind of, so I pledged, and then they send you an email, and you actually get free swag if you confirm your email. So you can either get a sticker or a koozie So I actually have a koozie coming to me. I'm pretty excited about that. So you can check that out.
Sounds great. Sounds worth it.
I mean, that makes my day. So, and if you do want to check it out, it's called www.takecraftback.com. So you can check it out.
Yeah, watch the video.
The video, yeah.
But again, it's just another volley in the war on, you know, between, and I'm doing air quotes for those, well, for anyone, because this is a podcast, craft breweries versus, you know, the big boys, the macro breweries. And it's a war that, in my opinion, the craft brewers really have a stake in continuing, because like it or not, craft beer, it kind of propelled itself as this, you know, you always have to have a Goliath, a David and a Goliath. They're the David. And the Goliath obviously is craft beer, and that's the narrative that they have been painting for 30 years. And now that the lines are blurring, they're desperately afraid they're just going to start fighting amongst themselves, which is kind of happening as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I mean, it's much more advantageous for the little guys or the mid-sized guys to continue to say, "Hey, we're not Anheuser-Busch," than it is for Anheuser-Busch to pick that fight.
Right.
They want to just be like, "Hey, beer is great. Look at these great brands that beyond their own." So I think you're spot on in that analysis. And
they still seem a little hurt by the Budweiser commercial, which I took a lot of guff because I thought it was funny. And
the peach one?
Yeah. You know,
this was the Super Bowl ad like 2 years ago, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
A bunch of dudes that looked like me swirling their beers like I do and sniffing their goblets like I do. And, you know, you got to laugh at it. You got to laugh at yourself. I mean, they're painting a picture of why people would drink Budweiser over, mm-hmm. You know, the hottest beverage on the market at the time, craft beer. And that's what marketing and advertising is and all the rest of it. And I thought it was pretty funny. And but a lot of people were very upset with it, a lot of thin skins in this business. And, you know, I think this has just been going on and on since then. You know, craft beer has been saying horrible, horrible things about macro brewers for many, many years. And then they, you know, have one jokey commercial and everyone loses their shit. You know, I mean, it's fine for us to go, "They're evil. You know, these people are taking over the world. They're going to be the death of us all." And then they go like, "Oh, these guys are a little pretentious." And we go, "What? Fuck you." We're, you know, like, hey, everyone's just got to simmer down. I mean, you know, it's there's just a lot of money involved now that wasn't involved before. And all of these craft brewers' problems with the situation today of shelf space and, you know, tap handles and all that, none of that is new. This is all, if anything, it's easier than it's ever been to convince a bartender or a bar owner or a beer buyer, you know, "Hey, I've got a really good product. Will you put it on?" I mean, try doing that 20 years ago at a bar that had four taps and, you know, three of them were light beers. You know, it wasn't going to happen.
Right, right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I also think it's interesting that with this campaign, they were kind of pushing that independent brewer label, which is another kind of
big time, right?
Thing they're really pushing, which is brand new. They've been approved, so
let's talk about that for a second,
yeah.
This label, right? So the BA, the Brewers Association, has, in their continuing effort to keep this war on the forefront, they have come up with a certification that you can put on your label if you meet these criteria of being an independent brewer. You know, I believe it's you have to have less than 25% ownership by a bigger brewer.
It 6 million barrels or less production.
6 million. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's the Sam Adams rule.
Right.
So anything Sam
Adams.
Got to
keep the Sam Adams numbers in there for the VA. Yeah.
So anything Sam Adams is, that's kind of the joke, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They're going to produce 5.9 million.
Yeah, and then traditional is the other rule. I kind of looked these up just out of curiosity. So they say that, you know, can't be flavored malt beverages are not considered beer. So no Smirnoff Ice, craft brewers.
No Mike's Hard Lemonade.
No Mike's Hard, yeah.
Sam Adams, funny enough, is making some
flavored
malt beverages, are they not?
Yeah, and it says majority of total volume. So they certainly give brewers plenty of wiggle room to play in those spaces. So,
What are the other criteria? Is that it?
That's it. And then they have to, you know, have the proper brewer's notice from the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, and sign a licensing agreement, which is free for the with the BA. So, and that's pretty much it. So it looked pretty simple to achieve if you're within those.
So there you
categories.
Go. So, you know, I understand there are some people out there who, you know, who makes their beer is very important to them. And, you know, it's important to me. It should be important to everyone. But it is not, to me, the sole reason I buy beer. And in many cases, you know, there's people I like very, very much whose beer I don't buy. You know, so nothing on that criteria mentions quality or flavor. And that's what I still kind of, those are my one and two, you know, highest criteria for buying a beer for me personally. So, you know, I think this label, you know, I know we've talked about it before, but the people who I think make those choices about, you know, only buying local or only buying small independent breweries, they already know which ones are small and independent, right? I mean, don't they?
See, I don't know if that's the case. And I've been thinking about this personally, like, what is my strong opinion on this? And I think the issue I have is when, you know, one of the big brewers tries to pass off their brands as being a small brand.
They do that for sure. A lot of people took a long time for people to realize Blue Moon was a Miller product.
Right.
But none of those people were us. None of those people were.
But I don't think this label is for us. I think it's for kind of the average consumer who is probably not as aware of, you know, the recent acquisitions or, you know, like there are people who take our tours who still to this day don't know that Goose Island is owned by Anheuser-Busch. I would actually say of the tourists, probably a majority of them don't know that.
Right.
It's that high.
Do you feel it changes their perception of it when you let them know that?
Not really. I mean, we, in all honesty, we still serve Goose Island on our tours because
I still serve it in my bar.
Yeah, because and this kind of goes to your point, you know, they make some great beers and I respect the history of Goose Island, even though they're now owned by Anheuser-Busch. And, you know, most of our beers are going to be locally. It's not really taking away from the locally produced beers. I still think it has a great story to tell. So we don't spin it in a way where we're like, here, drink this beer. It's owned by Anheuser-Busch. You should hate it. You know? So we try to spin it in the right way. But and so I think when we tell people they're surprised, but they're not necessarily upset, if we spun it so they would be upset, we could easily make them be upset. But we don't do that because that's not what we want to do. So,
But I think that's what the BA wants to do.
Of course, yeah. Right. And it's to other brewers' benefits to do so.
Right. To the members of the BA.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. So,
and that's at the end of the day, that's what the BA is there for, to advocate for its members.
Right.
So, right. You know.
But, you know, I think it's a... And I'm curious on this, too. I've noticed recently, within the past year, I would say between 2 and 3 years ago, going to grocery stores or places where you wouldn't necessarily expect to find really local beer, There was. There was, like, all of a sudden I could go into 7-Eleven and there was some extremely local beer and it would surprise me.
Yeah.
I feel like that's trended the other way now, so that when I go into these places, all of a sudden there isn't as much local beer, and in replacing them are kind of these craft brands that have been purchased by the bigger breweries.
But, you know, I just to play devil's advocate here and have some sort of a controversy,
yeah.
I always feel that, you know, 20 years ago we went out of our way to find these nice beers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't shop for beer at the Jewel or CVS or 7-Eleven, you know? And guess what? Those are all big, giant corporations, too, just like AB and Miller,
right.
You know? So there's a lot more specialty bottle shops out there. There's a lot more specialty liquor stores. And or maybe there aren't. Maybe those have gone away, you know, along with the mom-and-pop hardware stores and all the rest of it. So maybe, you know, maybe don't buy your independent local craft beer at you know, the 7-Eleven. Maybe go to your specialty beer store that might be a dollar more a six-pack because, you know, they can't compete with a 7-Eleven. And, you know, it just seems to me that the complaints from a lot of these small brewers are the same. They're big beer complaints.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's a great point because, one, you know, even though it's an industry, they're
like, big beer is stopping me from becoming big beer.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I guess they are. Yeah. I didn't know you wanted to be big beer, you know?
Right. Well, and like we've talked about at length on this podcast, you know, there's a rush for growth in the industry.
There is.
That
there's a lot of expansions that have to be paid for.
Yeah, and that's not... It's not an industry that you can really bootstrap. It's expensive. It's
right.
Very capital intensive. So, yeah, it's interesting. This is certainly going to keep playing out. I mean, this is an issue that's probably going to get way more contentious, I would assume, over time.
I think you're right. I mean, you know, I was asked over the weekend what's going on with the bubble. It's leaking. I don't know if it's burst. But the bubble is leaking,
yeah,
and I think it's more from saturation than a lack of consumer. You know, the consumer growth isn't where it used to be, but it's not spiraling downward. There's just so much more competition amongst small breweries themselves, and now big beer is getting in on their competition, mm-hmm. and they're eating themselves. You know. You know, this is going to be, this podcast, if anyone listening is thinking about opening a brewery, maybe just turn it off now, because I don't think there's going to be any good news for you.
I don't think we've ever been like, you should open a brewery. Now's a great time.
I used to be that way.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, now it's, although there are contrarian views, actually Mark Lagenza, the Entour brewer.
Yeah, yeah. When he was on with us, he's like, no, there's plenty of more growth, especially in this city of Chicago you know.
And he might have a point. My point would probably be just wait a few years and you'll be able to buy a brewery on the cheap. That's my like sarcastic, cynical take on it.
Yeah, it's a, you know, unfortunate way to think about it, but it's probably some truth there. Mark also had a good, you know, attitude about his growth.
Yeah.
You know, he is not looking to be the next revolution.
Right.
Or the next Lagunitas or any of that, you know. And I think people need to have realistic expectations, you know. And
yeah. Shout out to them, by the way. This just, I forgot to mention.
Yeah, it's big congratulations, right?
Yeah, they won medals at the Great American... what is it? The
Great
Festival.
American Beer Fest, GABF. Two, I think, a bronze and a silver, and then they did so well that they won the Extra Small Brewery of the Year award under 1,000 barrels,
which is awesome. I mean, that's,
really awesome.
And I think Horse Thief Hollow also won. I'm trying to think of the other local breweries that won. I think.
Whole bunch.
Yeah.
Peace got another medal. They get a medal every year.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have a list in front of me. We're going to leave someone out. But
yeah.
Chicago was well represented in the GABF award ceremony, that is for sure.
Yeah, so props to all the brewers out there who did well.
Absolutely. Yes, Maplewood brought home another medal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Those guys are great. So.
Yeah, we'll have to have them on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They're fun.
Son of Juice Pants.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I thought we weren't allowed to talk about Northeast IPAs. I will say this. It's even infiltrated New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't called a Northeast IPA on the menu when I ordered it, but when I received it, it was looked like a glass of orange juice.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love that haze.
yeah. It wasn't terrible. I won't hate on the beer too much. I drank it. It had a little bit of bitterness to it, which I like. You know, some of these are just too sweet.
Yeah.
But I was just shocked to see it. You know, New Orleans beer scene is surprisingly not terribly strong. They, you know, it's a liquor town, maybe.
It's a cocktail town.
Yeah. I don't drink a lot of craft beer down there when I'm down there.
A lot of Sazeracs.
Yeah. For some reason, I was drinking a lot of champagne.
Oof.
I know.
That hurts in the next day. Did you add absinthe? Do a little...
Death in the
afternoon, I believe, a Hemingway.
Yes, I did not. Thank God. I would have been dead in the afternoon. I almost was already.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was a long weekend. Business partner came down with us. He, you know, he's Irish.
Yeah.
And it was...
The reputation held.
It was on like Donkey Kong, as the kids say.
I took a cocktail. I was just down there a few weeks ago. I took a great cocktail tour down there. So.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a neat city. So.
Shout out to the Mid-City Yacht Club. Always listeners of the podcast,
yeah.
Too, by the way. And we did bacon bombs at the Yacht Club, and it was well-received.
Yeah,
well-received.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a good time.
Cool.
Boris and MJ always listen, and... they were wonderful host and hostess to us.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Yes. Right. Yeah, more bad news. we have this article. Now, there were a couple articles that came out. You pointed out this good beer hunting article. I hadn't actually read that, but I did read, I think, the article that inspired it, which was an interview with Kevin Bolin, the owner of the mayor of Old Town in Fort Collins. And he brought up a point that I've heard many times from many bar owners, and which I have always kind of tried to, you know, look at the opposite end of it. But he doesn't carry any beers of any bars or any breweries that are competing with his bar. The way he looks at it, if you are opening a tap room that, you know, does exactly what he does, which is... have live music and food, and you know, why would he support direct competition? And you know, myself and Michael Roper had a conversation about this, and he doesn't go that far. There's no one he's like blackballed from buying, but he does see the proliferation of tap rooms in Chicago as a big issue for competition to his bar. We have quite a few tap rooms by us here at Kaiser Tiger, none of which I've ever really, you know, I've been in this business a long, long time, and I try to tell myself, and maybe I'm wrong, but I always think of myself as my only competition, you know, that if I put forth the best product I can and put forth my best effort into my place, I will succeed, and the bars around me aren't my competition. I am, you know, and my standards of what I am doing is the only thing that I'm competing against, right? But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. A lot of people don't feel that way.
Well, and I think, I mean, this gets into just like kind of general like business concepts. I remember when I first opened up the tour business, I mean, now there are 150 tours in Chicago. You have a tour for Cupcakes, Gangsters, Chocolate, you name it. You can find somebody that's going to be able to give you a great experience about
it. Is it a Cupcake tour?
Yeah, yeah. You want to go? We'll pair that with a beer
tour. I hear Cupcakes are the new cakes. I'm down with that.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're too worried about your competition, it can just debilitate you. You won't be able to do anything. So I agree with your point in that if you, I do think if you provide a great experience, especially It's small business. Yeah. It's not like you can throw just tons of money at the issue either. You have to just...
I mean, I've seen bars get put out of business by competition, but there are bars that are just stagnant, and they, you know, you talk about location. That's the most important thing in this business, and it is if you are terrible at everything else, then location is the most important part of your business. But if you're offering something unique and interesting and well done, a lot of times it doesn't matter where you open. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's around you. People will still frequent your business. I
was kind of thinking about this, and I mean, Chicago has gone through a huge boom in not just breweries, but also now the breweries are opening tap rooms.
I've been to like probably 6 openings of tap rooms in the past 3 months.
I want to say there's approximately 25 now open in the city, and which is like from 0 7 years ago. So you can see where this kind of conflict is and why people are concerned about it. And this has been going on, obviously, in Denver and other cities as well.
Yeah.
So,
and the guy in Fort Collins was mostly concerned about it. He's like, look, have your tap room, you know? Mm-hmm. Let people sample your product at the place where it's made. That's, a God-given right, you know? You should be able to go to a brewery and purchase a beer. I think his problem is when those tap rooms really are just a cover for another bar.
Glorified brew pubs, in a sense.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that... So I was trying to think of, as a consumer, because you're a bar owner, so you have kind of that angle, and a consumer, of course.
Yeah.
But as a consumer, the difference is, when I, will go out to a tap room, what am I expecting? I'm expecting them to close early. So, a lot of times tap rooms aren't going to be open much past 10 p.m. So that leaves, and that was mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that reduces competition. Now, if you're open later and have live music and have food, the other thing I was thinking is food. A lot of tap rooms don't serve food. They might have food trucks. I like food trucks, okay, but I'm not like, oh, wow, this brewery has a food truck. I'm going to plan my whole meal around there. I think that's another competitive advantage that bars have. And then bars have, a lot of times a more social atmosphere. Tap rooms often, almost all the times, are kind of sleek. Most of them are new, right? So they're modern. They have kind of clean lines, and they're, I don't know. They lack kind of an order.
Well, I think traditionally you had brewery guys opening a tap room, right?
Yeah.
And brewery guys, they're very focused on one thing.
Yeah.
And that's making beer. And their tap rooms would be very bare, and often the service was pretty terrible. And, because these guys, that's not what they do.
Yeah.
They understood people wanted to have a beer while they were there. Fine. I'll put a little tap system over here and you can buy some beers and we'll sell growlers and blah, blah, blah. But that's not really what's opening up anymore, Off Color is getting ready to open a really nice, I would call it a brew pub, but because they're serving other people's beer, they have liquor. They have food, the whole nine.
Once you have food, then that really changes it, I think.
It's going to be a beautiful, really nice place, I still don't have any problem with this. I didn't realize it was as, I had a very, it, you know, I didn't know it was so prevalent with other bar owners, being in the West Loop, there isn't, none of us see each other as competition, me and the other restaurants and bars down here. It's a very community-based restaurant business down here, and we're all kind of helping each other out. But it's a unique situation in the West Loop where we're all kind of, we were all pioneering the neighborhood. Maybe that'll change, Patty Long's in Lakeview, there is not the camaraderie between the bars as there is here. It's just a much more established neighborhood. I don't see any of them as competition either, but certainly they probably see me as competition. I've gotten stares from bar owners in Lakeview when I've walked in, and they're like, what the fuck's he doing here?
No kidding.
Is he trying to steal something? Trying to steal an idea
from
me?
But that's because you're carrying a big baseball bat with you.
Well, I was just out for a game.
The
wasn't wrapped in barbed wire or anything. It wasn't like a Walking Dead bat or anything.
No,
but you know, apparently, I don't know. Things are very competitive right now, yeah. And across the board, right? And it's going to get uglier before it gets better.
Yeah, and I also think there's some other trends that maybe blur this. In other words, tap rooms might be an easy scapegoat for just the pressures that neighborhood bars are facing, which is unfortunate. And
right.
I think a much more kind of, if tap rooms weren't in existence, it would still be an issue.
Yeah, people are always looking for reasons why their restaurant or bar is failing that don't have to do with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always point to them first. But, there have been some places that I really liked that I thought were really good that have closed. But, I just think that's more oversaturation.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, is I think the era of just opening up a beer bar without, for financial gain, without any passion for the product or for what you're doing, those days are nearing an end. In other words, you can't just, you know, throw some craft beers on and be like, oh, yeah, we're a craft beer bar now, and expect people to come. The competition's gotten fierce, so that you're going to have you know, a passion, or you're going to have some type of other hook to get people to come. I'm curious on your, you know, because you guys.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, we've talked about the fake beer bars many times. Yeah, you're right. Those are falling to the wayside. You know, I always like the guys who reconcept, except all they change is the tap list. You know, oh, we're reconcepting, now we're a beer bar. Well, you know, same name. Yeah. You didn't even, like, buy any new stools or anything.
They threw in a couple other flat screens.
All you did was, you know, break your pay-to-play contract with Bud and put on a couple craft beers. Yeah, way to go. Yeah, those are going to the wayside. But certainly, I can't deny the existence of massive competition right now. It's out there. I guess tap rooms are piling on to it.
I will say, with the tours, I've noticed a big change in our demographics from locals to tourists. And I think part of that is just we're in existence longer, so there's more awareness in that market. But I think a lot of it was when we first started touring, there really weren't a lot of breweries that you could actually visit. So if you wanted craft beer, and this was 2011, it's really not that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you put it together and it was like, okay, you got that neighborhood and that neighborhood.
Yeah.
With like little pockets of beery places you could walk to. I could name you five more you could start up a tour in right now.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And so now why would you pay? So the locals didn't really have, they didn't have a lot of options if they wanted to learn and taste these beers. Now, I think that we are losing them to the tap rooms and the breweries, but I'm kind of with you. I'm not mad about it. Like, I don't blame locals for doing it. In fact, I want them to go to local breweries and support the local beer market. Like, I'm not mad, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's happened, but I'm not upset about it because I'm happy that the craft beer market is growing, and I think there's ways for me to think about my business and how I can add to that and recreate products and come out with other things. So,
it's a nice segue into this other article we wanted to talk about from All About Beer magazine, and it's called "A Brew Pub's Collapse 20 Years Ago." Sounds familiar, right? And it's you know, it's about a brew pub in New York that went out of business after a very, very long run. And I do have, you know, some personal experience with this.
When I read this article, it just made me think back to the conversations we've had about your experience working here in the 90s.
So, I worked at three different brew pubs, only one of which made it out of the 90s, and it was closed maybe by 2006 or something. But are we seeing a flashback to 1997, 98, 99? And that's where, for those of you who don't remember, we had this big craft beer revolution in the 90s, and all these places opened, and a lot of them weren't very good. There's a little bit of a flashback there. I remember when people would talk to me about this 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I would say, this is much different because the places opening now are really good, you know, because you had places like Revolution opening and Metro and Off Color. And, you know, these guys all came from other breweries and had brewing experience. We're making, you know, pretty good product from the get-go. That was in the 90s, you know, no one had any experience. There wasn't this tradition of, you know, stealing brewers from Goose Island.
you know, there wasn't occasional rock bottom.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. There wasn't a platform for these guys to go through. You know, there wasn't an evolution for these brewers to go through. And they were pretty terrible. But, you know, I'm seeing that again. I'm having a lot of bad experiences with new breweries. And it is reminiscent.
Really?
Of, yeah.
Do you think it's gotten worse recently?
Yes.
Or is it?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, there's been I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say 100 breweries have opened up in the Chicagoland area in the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just read an
article. Maybe 2 years.
If you include parts of Wisconsin and Indiana, which is a little disingenuous, we were up to 212, and this was 5 months ago. So we probably tack on another 10 or more, probably, right?
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
So to continue the story, people started to associate what we called microbrews back then with beers that didn't really taste that good. And a lot of places closed, and a lot of places should have closed. A few places that I thought were great closed. So the article kind of goes into, are we spiraling into another, you know, is history repeating itself, basically? And, you know, I think this also goes back to our original topic of craft versus big beer and what does it mean anymore? And, you know, a lot of people are saying the word craft is dead. It isn't dead because it means something to people because, you know, you put it, I mean, if it didn't mean something, big beer wouldn't be trying to absconce it from, you know, these little breweries. I mean, you know, you put craft on the label. There's a great article about Tito's that's floating around. Tito's is now this is a vodka. Tito's, it's called Tito's Handmade Vodka.
It's out of Austin, right?
It's sort of. And it is now the number one liquor in America. It's
wow.
Taken over Smirnoff.
Wow.
Which has been the number one spirit in America for decades. I don't know. A long time.
Yeah.
And since I've been paying attention. And, you know, he's done it through this mirage of it being a handcrafted craft, and he uses all these words, handcrafted, craft, you know, small batch. He uses, I mean, you can't make
small
batches of vodka when you're the largest vodka producer in the country. I'm sorry. But it worked, right? And is Tito's a good product? You know, I guess so. Vodka is, you know, it's
kind of
the best vodkas are right. Tasteless and odorless. So
yeah, right.
I guess, I don't know. I don't drink it, but, you know, his marketing and tying Austin into it, which has all of these, you know,
Austin cool, right?
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, an independent South by Southwest, you know, music fest
Keep
and all
Austin
this stuff.
Weird.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It worked. And so these things, these words do matter. They do, you know, they have no legal definition. That's what the BA tries to does, but they're not a legal entity. You know, they can't stop anyone from writing craft on a label. So, you know, I'm a proponent of dropping craft and just calling beer beer, you know, because people are starting to drive themselves nuts trying to figure out what is what. And I think the flavor and the taste of the product is the farthest thing from their brain, and it should be the closest.
I respect your point. I'm going to disagree a little bit here in that.
Please do.
I think that I still think, like, and this transcends beer, right? Like, I think when I think of craft beer, I think of a lot of kind of anti-corporate America, anti-big business, which, you know, and I'll try not to get too political here, but
no, I agree with that.
And so I think it's celebrating, in a lot of ways, small business and independent people who you can go to a bar and you can go on a tour and you can drink a beer where you know the people, you see them. I think there is a value to that. Now, I agree with you in that that shouldn't be the only question. In other words, that shouldn't be, I'm not going to buy a bad beer just because I know who's making it. But I do think that supporting those people is a positive, you know, there is a value to that. And so I don't really have a problem with it. I'm not going to get too wound up about it at the end of the day. Like, so that's kind of where I am on it, if that made any sense.
It was very wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Calling out for that. Very wishy-washy. Flip-floppy. But I get what you're saying. People are concerned about those things, though, and I guess,
numbers from
they're being marketed to.
Yeah. A couple numbers that I really got a kick out of from that article that just kind of shows you where we are and where we've come from. In 1983, there were 3 brew pubs in the country. I read that and I had to reread it like 4 times.
1983?
Yeah, 1983.
So was it Sierra Nevada, New Albion? Bert, I bet it was Burt Grant's. Yeah. Remember that one?
I do not. But the brew pub definition, by the way, is just a small brewery that serves food. So it's not just any brewery. It's a specific definition. And then 500 in 1995. That's when this happened in 1997 when Zip City shut down.
Yeah.
And then it went back down. But now, at the end of 2016, we were at 1,900 brew pubs in the country.
So,
just brew pubs.
Yeah.
Out of the 5,300 breweries in the country, so 1,900 of those. I just thought that was interesting to kind of show how the industry has changed, and that's why I think that the bubble talk is real, and I think that the competition is getting fiercer and fiercer. This industry that was so,
and it's bigger and bigger breweries that are opening brew pubs as well. We've got a Ballast Point brew pub being opened up the street.
Yeah, I mean, Goose Island is opening up brew pubs all around the world now.
Yeah.
I'll be curious. They're about to reopen here in Chicago.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But, you know, we're still, it's not going to, in my opinion, it's not going to be 1997. The industry is not going to go away. Could there be dips? Yes, but it's not going to be this where it's like, oh, this craft beer was just a trend. It's here to stay.
So, I will say the Ballast Point guys showed up here. They texted me and they're like, are you around? I need to come by with my boss. So I was like, okay, you know. And I thought maybe they were going to tell me they'd been sold again. But no, they came by just to tell me that they're opening this brew pub up the street. And, you know, obviously they don't want me to stop ordering their beer.
Yeah.
You know,
just
so
how many fruited IPAs will they have on
track? I don't know, but that was my first clue that this is really a concern of bar owners, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm foolish and naive for not being concerned about this stuff.
I also need to look into like Tide houses. Like, this is definitely just a workaround now around Tide houses, right?
It sure seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's state to state.
Yeah.
And I know Anheuser-Busch had a tough time dealing with this Goose Island Clybourne pub. They couldn't buy it with the original purchase of the brewery. You know, they couldn't legally hold the liquor license. So I think I don't think they have a brew pub license. I think it's a tasting room license. Mm-hmm. And they're making beer there, obviously. They always have. And it's just a tasting room. And I'll be curious to see if they're serving any, you know,
food
or liquor. I don't think they're able to serve either. That's the, in Illinois, those are the, you can serve food. You can't serve liquor or anyone else's beer with the tasting room license.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. The laws seem to change every week. You know? As soon as you think you figured it out, someone opens up something that goes against every rule you've been told. So who knows? And the Ballast Point, that's the same, you know, that's basically Corona opening a brew pub up the street. You know, doesn't bother me. It might bother Rick Bayless, who has a Mexican-themed brew pub right around the corner from there.
I thought, didn't he, The Tycoya, isn't that Constellation?
Yeah, so he's even tied in with Constellation.
I don't
right?
even
You're
know.
Right, yeah.
yeah, I don't even know how that.
His brew pub, though, Cruz Blanca, I don't think has any tie in with Constellation.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
So his, you know, his pals over at Constellation might be screwing him, but you know, I don't. That's between them, right?
Yeah. Oh man. Yep.
Yeah, it's right by Publican as well.
Okay.
Who might be, you know, hope they went and buy and talked to those guys because they're a lot closer to it than I am.
Yeah.
Although Publican probably doesn't buy their product anyway.
Yeah.
Since they're owned by Constellation.
You say that as I'm looking at this gorgeous oil-painted pig right over your shoulder.
Oh, yes.
If you haven't been at a Kaiser Tiger, it is a treat. Patty Lungs as well.
Shout out to Una Latchford, who painted that. That is Chris's sister-in-law.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It's great.
From Dublin. She shipped it over. Awesome. She's not listening to this, so I don't know why I'm shouting out to her.
That's great. Oh, man.
All right. Well, nothing but bad news. Yeah. If you're looking to open a brewery or a brew pub or, God forbid, a tasting room.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the scourge of the tasting room.
Yeah, and real quick, I if you don't mind, I do want to bring up one other article that I just think is interesting, which is the MillerCoors Exec's Dish on the State of Craft Beer by E.J. Soltz, which was published in Ad Age magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And Pete Marino, who's the president of the 10th and Blake, which is their craft division at MillerCoors, was interviewed. And he just
There's
had
that a, word again.
Yeah.
Craft. So right. Miller has a craft division. Maybe it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But he had a couple things that I just thought were interesting because, you know, and he's responding to the first thing we discussed, which was that, you know, trying to buy Anheuser-Busch, the Brewers Association. And he basically said that I just think this is great. If the number of inbound calls that we are getting is any indication, more and more independent craft brewers are open to the idea, or at the very least exploring their options to partner with a large brewer or financial partner, which kind of goes to one of your points you said at the top of the podcast, which is like, you can't just blame the big guys here. The small guys are taking
the
cash.
Right, all those guys were members of the BA at some point.
They weren't.
Right?
There wasn't a gun to their head, let's just say that. And then he also... he said that in terms of if they're done acquiring, which is another topic that's come up a lot, both in Anheuser-Busch or whatever, or MillerCoors, he said geographic beer style compliant. So that makes a lot of sense, and I think that's something that people have assumed. So in other words, they're not going to buy two big brands in the same geographic area.
Right.
He said valuation has to be realistic, and then he said they're starting to become more realistic. Remember when we, speaking of Constellation.
Yeah, Ballast Point, $1 billion.
I mean, that was the highest valuation, and it's come way down since then.
It certainly has.
And they wrote, I think they had to write off some of that value already.
Did come out with some disappointing numbers, yeah.
So, and then they need to make sure the right people. So that's their kind of... what he said. And then he also said that he's heard from distributors that they're looking to cut some of their long tail brands and SKUs that aren't moving, which again kind of makes sense when you have 30,000 SKUs. Those big, at least the big retailers, are probably having a hard time.
He talks about the beer aisle turning into the wine aisle.
Yeah, which
and it's a good point, right?
Really interesting. Apparently, the big beer brands in particular are really worried about the winification, they said, of beer, which I thought was fascinating because when you know, if you look at the number of independent wine operators and wine brands, it's
staggering.
Staggering.
It blows beer away.
It's not even close. But the big brewers don't want that because they want the brands, they want people to buy on the brand power, which makes sense when you're a huge $100 billion company.
Yeah, I think he's also talking about people going in and saying, well, I want a Merlot.
Uh-huh.
And then they're just like looking at all the Merlots and then buying a Merlot. And they don't want that to happen with beer. People going in and going, you know, I want a Goza. And then just like looking at,
I'm sure
some people do that.
Well, I was going to say, like, I do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go and I'm going to be like, I'm kind of in the mood for an IPA or I'm kind of in the mood for a porter stout or,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, yeah, that's all their problem in my mind, you know. You know, people are going to buy beer any way they want. And, you know, there are a lot of styles out there. I don't know. It's probably getting that way.
Yeah. I mean, I will walk into, you know, beer stores or bars these days, and it's kind of my job to be on top of this stuff, and I'll still be like, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. They do still, you know, your average liquor store is still grouping beers by the brewery, aren't they? Whereas you go into a wine store and or go into the wine aisle and things, you know, from different, you don't keep all of one vineyard together.
It's category
specific.
Yeah,
reds are over here, whites are over here.
It's a really good point. You're absolutely right.
You know, once again, those are all big beer problems to me. I don't see it, you know, whatever.
You would have.
Sorry, that's concerning the guy from Miller, but
yeah,
I couldn't give a shit.
Oh, man.
All right. I think it's about that time. What do we got going on?
Just rocking and rolling, you know, corporate, or I should say holiday. We're booking a lot of holiday tours, so people who want to do holiday tours, they can book beer tours. They're a lot of fun to kind of go out and connect with people during the holiday season. About to announce our 2018 schedule as well, so...
Nice. Yeah. I will shamelessly plug two Pilsner Urquell events. Not craft beer. It's not. It's Pilsner Urquell. It's owned by Miller.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But
you've
it tastes
sold out, man.
So good. And if you want to have your life changed by drinking the unfiltered week-old Pilsner Urquell, you can do so on Thursday, November 9th at Kaiser Tiger. And then the following Saturday, November 11th, at Patty Long's.
Have you told the Beer Temple guys, Chris over there?
I've not told him yet. He did show up to the last one.
Yeah. Okay.
With a cadre of beer lovers. I also on the 11th, November 11th, at Kaiser Tiger, in between the sessions at FOBAB, we are doing our annual Dice of Doom with Three Floyds Brewery and Malort.
Now, what are the rules of this again?
So we have a big table, and you roll a giant 20-sided Dungeons & Dragons die, and it determines your prize, which could be anything from barrel-aged Dark Lord to... barrel-aged Malort to just a shot of Malort, or there's also some booby prizes. Well, shot of Malort is probably a booby prize, but, you know, you might just get a sticker or, you know. So you get back in line until you get the one that you want. And that goes on in between the FOBAB sessions on that November 11th date, and then I'm cruising over to Patty Long's to wash all that Malort taste out with unfiltered Pilsner.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It should be an epic day. Boris from Mid-City Yacht Club is coming up here.
Nice.
If you want to meet this man that we talk about all the time.
He's a really good
here.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I got going on.
Could you imagine going to FOBAB, then coming here and doing like five shots of Malort, and then going back to FOBAB? The thought terrifies me. So don't go to that second session of FOBAB. Go to Patty Long's. For the unfiltered.
Exactly. Go to the first session of FOBAB, then over to Dice of Doom, and then wash it all down with Pilsner Urquell at Patty Long's.
Yeah.
That's a perfect day.
Yeah. Doesn't get much better than that.
No. All right. Well, Bruce is back in the saddle. Yeah. Does it feel good?
It feels good. This new setup is great. Thank you, guys. This is awesome.
Yes.
I don't know what to do. I'm so fired up.
Settle down. Okay. Settle down. All right. Well, until next time, thank you all for listening. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you.
All right. Thanks, guys.